Wednesday on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard R. Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ. I will not give you my middle initial, though.
You will not. Okay, that's fine with me.
It's because I'm in the witness protection program, so...
Facebook has just done something that's going to help everybody with their privacy. They're eliminating the Friends API, and I'm going to explain why that is really important.
Okay.
And I signed up for, I asked for an invite to Google's new cell phone service, Project Fi. And you can just go there and sign up. I'll talk a little bit about Project Fi.
Interesting. So you can use this on an iPhone then?
No, you can only use it. You can only use it on the Samsung Galaxy 6.
Oh, that was what I was wondering about, because Google and Apple hate each other. So
they hate each other. But on the other hand, I think it's a beginning, and they're gonna launch it there. But I think eventually they'll open this to everyone, because Google really just wants to sell advertising.
Right.
And they don't care where the advertising is, really. They don't care what phone it is.
All money is green.
App of the Week is really interesting. It's an app that helps patients who have Alzheimer's remember people as they approach.
No kidding.
Like, it pops up all kinds of pictures about the person as they approach, so they can kind of look at their cell phone and it jogs their
memory. Using facial recognition?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So it's actually a nice deal, and there are a lot of free phone services for Nepal after the big earthquake over there. And this week, Google is actually switching their search algorithm. If your website is not mobile friendly, it's going to get knocked down all the way to the bottom. So you've got to be careful. And this week, we're going to feature the guy who was behind that eBay of the dark web called Silk Road, the drug exchange. Uh-huh. This is Ross Ulbricht. How he got into it, I mean, now he's been convicted, but how he got in, he hasn't been sentenced yet. How he got into it, he has an interesting life, and I don't think he started out as such a bad guy, but he kind of veered off the deep end, and it's an interesting story how he got into Silk Road. He wrote most of the code himself, and of course, it was a huge, huge mailbag.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
There he is, loud and proud.
Oh, pigs. Heavy, heavy,
wow.
Heavy.
And of course, he was of no help.
He was of zero help. We got an email from Margaret, Dr. Schertz. My experience for about a year, I've had Uma for about a year now, and it really hasn't been great. Margaret's written to us before. Got lots of drop calls, low quality voice, and other kinds of problems. Finally, a tech guy called me from Uma today. And he asked if he could adjust my Verizon Fios gateway, which is not a bad idea. I mean, I actually have Uma. I've had it for 3 years, and I've got fantastic results. And so it could be your gateway setting. So the Uma tech, as Margaret goes on to say, he went in and adjusted the IPv4 security settings, moving them from medium to minimum security, which I'm not quite certain what that would do, but he did make that change. And then he said, well, I think we should look at your quality of service settings, QoS. And that prioritizes different devices over other devices. But she said he couldn't find it on the Verizon router. Well, I don't know, Margaret. You just go log into your Verizon router, your username and password, and you go up to advanced settings, click on that, and then you get this splash screen that says, are you sure that you want to change these? Because if you don't know what you're doing, you could break everything. And then you say yes. And then when you go to the next screen, there on the left, about the seventh item down, is something called quality of service. Click on that. And in fact, what you can do then is that you can select the Uma device, because you know what the IP address is, and you can say that's the highest priority device on my network at home. And that may help. But I'm thinking, Margaret, that you don't have a lot of traffic on your network. I mean, you don't seem to me to like be downloading a bunch of movies and stuff. So it just like running Napster and running all these movies downloaded in parallel all the time. So I don't know whether the quality of service adjustment is going to make much difference to you unless you've got something on your network that's really using a lot of bandwidth and you want to make certain that the UMA device always has priority over that download function. Now, I don't ever have a problem on my network unless my son comes home to visit.
Well, there's that.
And then, all of a sudden, bingo, the downloads start hitting the network. and if I don't make certain that my UMA device has high priority, my toast is cooked. What am I going to say there?
Your goose is cooked.
My goose is cooked, yeah.
There was some food item that was going to be cooked.
My toast is burned.
Your bagel has been buttered or
That's
something,
right.
I don't know.
So I adjust the quality of service for me, but I think you're marching down the right pathway, and I would just keep on it because I do believe you'll eventually get it to work, and when you get it to work, you'll be quite happy with it. We got an email from Arnie in Crownsville, Maryland. Hi, Dr. Schertz. Last week, a listener had a question about someone who was using their Wi-Fi, and you gave her advice on how to figure out who was doing it. I found this program, Who Uses My Wi-Fi, WUMW, mm-hmm. project, and it checks for network intruders. This app could also be used for catching roaming wayward professors who drive around neighborhoods looking up open Wi-Fi networks.
Who could that be?
I wonder who that could be. I do that all
Richard
the time.
Richard R. Schertz.
Yeah, I do that. I do that about once a year, just as I haven't done that for a while. I think I should do an audit. What I do, I like to drive around with my Cantenna hanging out the window.
I do believe the Cantenna piece might have been in the show we did last week. The best of.
The best of.
Yeah, I think we had the Cantenna in there.
So I mean. Well, that I remember one time I was there with, this was right, it was not too long after 9/11, and I had my Cantenna in the car. My son was with me with his laptop, and we were driving around, and we were like sticking the Cantenna out through the sunroof and everything. And this policeman started following us because he was thinking, okay, these guys are up to something that isn't right.
Uh-huh.
And I sort of forgot about them, and then I was like trying to get the I thought, let's try the Wi-Fi networks down in this neighborhood and that neighborhood. I was just gathering data on how many unencrypted networks there were so I could report on it. And I made a U-turn. Bingo.
Uh-huh.
That policeman stopped me for illegal U-turn, so it cost me something.
Explain that to the police, what you're doing? How do you explain, I do the show on the radio, and I'm trying to figure
actually,
out whose Wi-Fi is encrypted?
Actually, what I decided to do was just say nothing.
Probably a wise move on your part.
Because I said, because anything I say is only, I'm only going to dig a deeper hole. So just take your lumps. So I just sat there and he walked around and he stared at the laptop stared at the Cantenna. He looked at Rich, my son, and then he walked around the car and then he just gave me the ticket. He decided that, well, maybe we weren't really up to anything suspicious, although it did look odd.
Yes.
Arnie also suggested that we should feature Robert Noyce for a profile in IT if we haven't done it in the past.
Uh-huh.
Well, that is a great idea. Robert Noyce, of course, was one of the co-founders of Intel, the man that got the patent for integrated circuits. He co-founded it with Gordon Moore. Well, I featured Gordon Moore and Robert Noyce together back on October 16th, 2008, 6 years ago. So, but Robert has never had his own personal profile.
This should happen.
I'm thinking this is a good suggestion because now Robert is known as the godfather of Silicon Valley, and so he gives a lot of advice to newcomers at Silicon Valley. I think he deserves his own show, so thank you. That was a great suggestion. We got an email from Carl Tyler. Dear Dr. Schertz, I'm a big fan of the TV show Person of Interest. On almost every show, the main character, John Reese, clones a cell phone of the person he's following. It doesn't take much time for him to do it, and after he clones the cell phone, he can listen to what the person's saying and who they're talking to. Is this really possible to hear what somebody's saying when they're, you know, talking on the cell phone? Also, I recently sent you an email about the FIDO Alliance, Fast Identity Online Alliance. I was just wondering if that email somehow got sent to your junk folder, because I haven't heard you talk about it. Well, Carl, actually, I didn't get that email, but I will talk about the FIDO Alliance. It's a great alliance. I'll talk to it, and probably that did go to my junk mail folder for some reason. But let's talk about cloning a cell phone. So if you clone a cell phone, it means that you take all the identifying data of a particular cell phone and program it into another one. Now, in the old days when we had analog phones, you could very easily clone an analog phone and listen in on somebody else. I mean, because it was just basically an FM radio kind of, and you could tune in on it. And so you could very easily clone a phone, and then you could listen in on somebody else's conversation quite easily. And so it, you know, it almost sounds like on TV they're showing some old analog phone systems. AMP is what they said, the acronym they had. Now the new systems, CDMA, co-division multiple access, which is the Qualcomm method, or GSM, global system for mobile, which is the European method, are encrypted signals. It's much more difficult to do that. Now you can take a CDMA phone, and if you've got all of the hardware numbers, you can actually go in and reprogram the the EEPROM in the phone, so you can basically configure it with new data. Now, what's going to happen though is that the network is going to detect it's got two phones with the same information, and it may reject it. And I'm not really convinced that you can hear what the other person is saying. The signal is going to go to one phone or the other, and that would be the same with the GSM. The GSM has a SIM card. Now the SIM card requires that you know the encryption key. So the only way to get that is you need the SIM card, and you look at the traffic between the SIM card and the phone, and you can infer the encryption key from that. So you need the encryption key to actually clone a GSM phone. I think what may make more sense if you want to eavesdrop on one of these newer phone technologies is to use a femtocell.
I'm sure you can pick one up at Rite Aid.
Yeah, femtocell. Mm-hmm. It's basically a mini cell tower, because what happens is the phone connects to the strongest signal. So you just get close to the guy who's there, and it will log into your femtocell. Then the femtocell would then connect to the regular cell phone network. So it goes through your femtocell, and in the process, it sends all of the data, all the encryption data, to the femtocell. So you can basically de-encrypt the message, and you can listen in to the message on the using the femtocell. They just had a Black Hat conference not too long ago, and the guys were demonstrating this. So I would think that they could probably use that. Then you could use that data to clone a cell phone if you wanted, but you could basically just listen in through the femto cell, and then you could actually stage a man in the middle attack if you'd want to, you know, put something on their phone.
Where would one get themselves a femto cell? And is that something that's expensive? Is it something just anybody could do?
Actually, have you seen these cell phone extenders that you can get from Verizon or AT&T? Those are actually femtocells.
Really?
Yeah. So you can just buy one. you can just buy one, you know, for your house, because you know if you've got a really weak signal,
right?
You can basically put a repeater there in your house, and then you put an antenna up high that connects to the cell phone tower, and then your phone connects to that local cell in your house. It's a femtocell.
Are these things expensive?
No, I don't think so. I don't think they're that expensive. I mean, a couple hundred dollars. And so So they were just using some off-the-shelf femtocells that they were getting. Now Verizon actually changed the changed their software a little bit so it couldn't be hacked quite so easily. But you know how
right.
Hacking is. They'll find a new way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was a very good question.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about this FIDO Alliance. The FIDO Alliance is really designed to find a way to get rid of passwords. It's a way to do authentication, you know, very secure authentication you can use everywhere. For instance, wouldn't it be nice, you know, you've got your thumbprint on your phone. Wouldn't it be nice if that thumbprint could be used for Facebook, could be used for LinkedIn, could be used for everything?
Mm-hmm.
So that biometric login could be used for all logins on all websites, and there would be no passwords.
And would, we'll take the hacking out of the issue.
Yeah, wouldn't that be beautiful? Well,
yeah.
In order for that to happen, there has to be a standardized authentication protocol.
Mm-hmm.
And so this FIDO Alliance is working on a standardized authentication protocol that can be used across the board. And all the big players are on it, PayPal, Google. I looked at their board of directors. They got a bunch of heavyweights on it. I think this thing's going to go through because I personally think that passwords are long overdue to be eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
Because actually people don't have good passwords.
No, they don't.
They everybody pretends like they do, but really they don't.
Yes, and but you do have a – well, most people have a thumbprint.
Most people do have a thumbprint, and that works really well. And so – or it could be any kind of biometric. So I think this FIDO Alliance is really excellent, and that's very nice that you brought that up, Carl, because I think that is a trend. I'm hoping that within the next couple of years we can eliminate passwords completely. Now, we got an email from Knock – in Ohio.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I know. That's it.
This could be trouble.
This is always trouble. These Ohio ones. We got two emails from Ohio today. I don't know what's happening.
They're nothing going, good.
Nothing.
Conspiracy of
yeah.
some sort.
Dear Doc and Jim, I heard you talk about Meerkat and Periscope on your podcast. You know, we mentioned it briefly
right.
one day.
Uh-huh.
Now, I would like to tweet live videos from our Mod Squad parties here in the basement.
Oh, dear God.
Now, I don't even know what that means, Mod Squad parties.
I don't want to know what it means.
No, I'm not going to ask anything about the Mod Squad. Now, which one is the best, Meerkat or Periscope? We love the show in Ohio. Sometimes we actually listen live, and other times we use the TuneIn radio app.
Do they listen during the Mod Squad parties?
I think they listen during the Mod Squad parties because I doubt if they have a Mod Squad party at 9 a.m. in the morning. I'd say they have.
They're probably pretty worn out from last night's Mod Squad party.
I'd think so. That's Knock, a loyal listener in Ohio. Well, Knock, the live streaming app Meerkat became a real sweetheart with the media at the South by Southwest conference. These guys from Israel went there, and they spent about a month throwing together the code, and they went there, and people just went wild over it. And so that all of a sudden, a lot of celebrities, everybody's getting on Meerkat, because what you could do is you could actually, you have to use your Twitter account, and then you could take, and using your Twitter account, you can attach a live video feed, so anybody who's connected to you via Twitter can watch that live video feed real time. And it just took the place by storm. Well, it turned out there was another company called Periscope that's been developing a very similar app for a year, and they've been doing it in stealth mode. And about 4 months ago, they talked to one of the folks there at Twitter. Twitter liked it, and they bought Periscope. So now Twitter owns Periscope, which is a direct competitor with Meerkat. So the first thing that Twitter did, they eliminated access to some of the APIs to Meerkat because they wanted their Periscope
right.
to look better. So, for instance, the user tree, the user network, is only available through Periscope and not through Meerkat because they blocked that API. Now the main differences is that say if you're using Meerkat and you want to look the live stream, you can't do it from within Twitter. It's not integrated with Twitter. You sort of can find out about it through your Twitter feed, and there's a hyperlink. You click on that, and then you've got the live feed. But within Periscope, it's actually there directly. So Periscope also has little heart icons you can put on the pictures,
which are annoying. As
I know, you know, but you can do that. It's got a Facebook like button, and so Periscope is better integrated with Twitter. And so I think now we've got the streaming video wars between Periscope and Meerkat. Now I'm thinking that you're going to want to be streaming live videos from your Mod Squad parties, and I don't know if you want people to discover it or not. This is what I can't tell.
You can block people like you can on Twitter.
You can block people. But if you want people to discover it, you want to go with Periscope because they can search and they can find you much quicker through the user API.
Right. Here's the problem with Periscope, though, right now, is that you have to have an Apple device in order to be the broadcaster. The app is only an Apple app right now. They're still working on the Android app for this thing.
Yeah, because Meerkat came up with their Android app first.
Mm-hmm. So, and then the other thing about this, there are a couple things, because I use Periscope at work to broadcast some traffic reports. Mm-hmm. And the my experience is this is so new that a lot of the audience is low tide in the gene pool. It's yeah. troublemakers. These yeah. are, I'm trying to serve people with this,
yeah.
but from looking at it, you can see who's viewed your broadcast mm-hmm. after you've done it, and these are not people that are from Baltimore.
Yeah,
I don't know why they're looking at it.
But see, Jim, that may be just the right group for the Mod Squad parties.
This is so Mod Squad may be absolutely perfect for Periscope. Yes. You know, the other thing that's kind of crazy about it, you can also, apparently, I haven't figured out how to do this yet, you can see this on a desktop or laptop computer, mm-hmm. but we have not been able to download the app on a PC. But apparently there's a way where you can do it. And the crazy thing is, there are a lot more people watching this stuff
mm-hmm.
on a basic traditional computer as opposed to a mobile device. I'm curious to see who looks at this stuff at their work computer.
Yeah.
It's tough that you can't tell that from the app.
So this live streaming, you see, it's never really taken off, and people are trying to figure a way to, you know, to get live streaming to take off. And this is actually the first sort of attempt using Twitter that's actually been reasonably successful to get people to look at the live feeds.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. So people might have live feeds, say, of shows. You might go to a show and they would and it might be streaming live. Now, it turns out with Periscope, you can save it and play it back later. And with Meerkat, you can only look at the live
right.
feed. So that,
yeah.
that's another difference.
Periscope archives your stuff for 24 hours and then it's gone.
Okay.
So I don't know if there's a way. But the other thing that's interesting about this, and it's a bit of a problem, is that it also saves the video to your device. So
oh.
it eats up a lot of space.
Oh,
so you have
wow.
to go back and clear the cache of
So
the,
you just couldn't leave it on indefinitely. It would just eat up all your memory.
It's tough to say because I've seen some rather lengthy press
wow.
conferences and people have left it on during news events and stuff. I streamed something the other day, but the Baltimore mm-hmm. protest went on for 8 minutes.
Wow. You must have had a lot of memory in your phone.
Not really, which is weird because the iPad is running out of memory, but it worked for as long as I needed it to, and then I went in and got rid of it.
Wow. So there you go, Thong. I'm going to recommend Periscope for you because, you know, it's integrated with Twitter, probably easier to use.
I think we need to get their username so we
yeah.
can figure out exactly what these people are doing in Ohio.
That's what I want to find out, what those Mod Squad parties are all
yeah,
about.
Yeah, maybe we'll get invited.
Okay, we got an email from Thong. In Ohio. You see, this is the second Ohio.
Yeah, I get it.
I think they must have coordinated this.
Probably so.
Dear Tech Talk, my Facebook account has been hacked. I can't log in, and they're making comments that I don't like.
Uh-oh.
What can I do? Love the show and the podcast, Tung in Ohio. Well, first of all, Tung, you need to report that your account has been compromised immediately. You want to go to facebook.com/hacked. And there's a button that says my account's been compromised. And they actually have a pretty good process to try to validate who you are. What they'll do, there are secondary ways to contact you on your account. And if they haven't been changed, they'll try that. If they have been changed, they'll go to your friends. And they'll say, which friends would you like us to contact? And they'll contact these friends and say, look, my account's been hacked. And then Facebook will contact them and see whether your friends will validate you are who you are and that mm-hmm. your account's been hacked. So actually, it's a pretty good method because the person who hacked it, of course, is not going to be able to have the friends make that comment to him or about him. Now, so that's but you need to move quickly before they do too much damage. Now, one thing that you cannot do, they've probably changed the email address that's tied to the account. And so you could probably create a new Facebook account using your old email address that was tagged to your old account. I would recommend that you not do that because everything is indexed to that email account. So if you've created a new Facebook account with the same email address and then you tell Facebook, I want to recover my email, my Facebook account, and this is my email address, they'll only see your new account. So just if you want to create a new Facebook account, use a different email address. Now, turn on approvals. They also have a two-factor authorization that if you would have had turned on, you wouldn't have this problem. You want to go under security, go onto the Facebook website, and they have something called extra security features. And what you do is that you turn on the approval so that if anybody logs into your device from a new location, from a different device, a different laptop, a different mobile device, it's going to note that, and it's going to send a code to your cell phone, and you've got to put that code into the login screen in order to log on. Well, since the guy who stole your account would not have had your cell phone, he wouldn't be able to log on, even if he had your password, because he would need that special code. So I would highly recommend you turn on notifications, and then this will never happen again. Listen, we love all your emails.
Indeed we do.
Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. We'll cover it on the show, or we may actually email you directly.
Or both could happen.
That's right.
It's Saturday morning, and you're listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2, and now also on 103.9 FM, HD2. Stand by. More of Tech Talk coming up.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the Internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University Innovative Approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn-by-doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University, changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the Internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to talk about Ross William Ulbricht. Ross William Ulbricht, otherwise known as Dread Pirate Roberts, is the founder and mastermind behind Silk Road, which is the eBay of the dark web, which was used for selling all sorts of illicit products, focusing primarily on drugs.
Right.
Ross William Ulbricht, as his mother called him, was born March 24th, 1984, in Austin, Texas. He was an Eagle Scout.
That's where it all went wrong.
I was an Eagle Scout. That should have been where it all went right. In high school, his friends called him Rossman. And Rossman drove an old Volvo, smoked pot. That doesn't really tie with Eagle Scout too much.
No, it doesn't. The Volvo's fine.
Yeah, the Volvo's
okay. It was a new Volvo.
Yeah. It was an old Volvo. Yeah, he smoked pot, but he still got 1460 on his SATs because he was a smart little guy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he earned a scholarship to the University of Texas at Dallas, and he majored in physics.
Uh-oh.
Physics.
See? You know, you could go either way. Use that smarts for good or for bad.
That's right. And then from there, he landed a job in the he landed a graduate scholarship at Penn State, where he studied material science and crystallography. Actually, he published a paper dealing with solar cells. I looked up his paper. It was quite a nice paper. When he got his master's degree in 2009, he moved back to Austin with his girlfriend. They used to sit around Penn State and smoke pot together. So he moved back with his girlfriend to Austin, and you know, he didn't have a job, and he sort of lost interest in scientific stuff, and he started reading New Age literature and sort of socialistic economic theories, and he began converting to becoming a libertarian. Now, he tried day trading for a while, and he didn't do very well, so he quit. Then he started a video game company, and that failed. And so these setbacks were pretty bad. He and his Julie was his girlfriend. They were sitting there, and you know, just trying to make. They had a little tiny apartment on the second floor, and they were just, you know, trying to get by month by month. Well, downstairs he had a neighbor who ran a book business called the Good Wagon Books, and this guy collected used books. Then he sold them on Amazon. That he was kind of an Amazon reseller of old books, and so. So his neighbor, he said, well, you know, Ross, why don't you help me out with this these Good Wagon Books because, you know, I need some help. So Ross went down and he built the Good Wagon website. He learned inventory management. He wrote a custom script that determined a book's price based on its Amazon ranking. Then he actually built all the shelves, you know, because they had around 50,000 books. And so he designed these special shelves that they built in the basement, so they could have all these shelves, and he designed them, he constructed them, everything was set. He was sitting there really, really quite happy with it, and so that things were going along. But by the end of 2010, he was kind of getting tired of the book business actually, and he started looking around for it, and he discovered Bitcoin, and so he had been reading Austrian economic literature that was dealing with how governments were oppressive with the use of in the way that they used monetary policy, and he had a dream. He had a dream of building a website that people could buy anything they want anonymously using Bitcoin, which he had just discovered. He thought, wow, this is pretty nice. And so this sort of was his libertarian dream. So he was sort of toying with this. And then one night in 2011, he was working alone late at night down in the Good Wagon Books warehouse area. And he heard this huge crash. And it turned out all the shelves collapsed. And apparently there were two final, they were sort of put together in a kind of a puzzle pattern. And the final two screws that actually had to be there to hold this whole assembly together, he failed to put in. So the thing fell apart shelf by shelf by shelf.
And he was just a physics major.
He was a physics major.
He should have known this.
Yeah, he was. Physics major who smoked pot.
Okay. All right. Thanks for clarification.
I think those last two screws probably were supposed to be put in the night that he and Julie were smoking pot.
The key words were, who smoked pot?
That's right. And so they went crashing down. And so he was like beside himself. So he talked to his friend and they said, you know, this book business is just not what it's cracked up to be. And they just decided to shut the whole thing down. And then he started working full time on this website that you could buy things anonymously on. Now it turned out that he also grew his own psychedelic mushrooms in the basement. You see, in addition to pot,
yeah,
he grew his own psychedelic mushrooms in the basement.
It's a gateway drug.
So what he did, he set up his site, and he called it Silk Road. Silk Road, of course, was the trade route that went from China through India to the Mediterranean, and it was where they brought silk from China all the way to Europe. It was the gateway between the East and the West. I mean, it was an East and West trade route. So he named it, because this was a bringing people together on the dark web, that so he called it Silk Road. And the first thing that he sold on Silk Road, and he made the sale in January of 2011, was a batch of the psychedelic mushrooms that he grew. That was the first deal. Now,
this doesn't, well, never mind. Conceptually, doesn't sound like a good idea, but
no, it doesn't. And I'm quite certain that his mom was saying, Ross William Ulbricht, whatever happened to your solar cell research? What are you doing on the psychedelic mushroom website? So he had because he couldn't use his real name, so he had a pseudonym. He named himself Dread Pirate Roberts, and he borrowed that name from the Princess Bride, and that was there was a pirate who was a mythical character in that book of the Princess Bride, Dread Pirate Roberts. For short, he was just DPR. Now, he did all the programming himself. He learned how to program on the fly. And he did all the transactions were automated, and he used something called CodeIgnite to write and rewrite the code. And this is fairly complicated because he was trading in bitcoins, you know. So he'd learned the whole Bitcoin cryptography and how that whole thing works. Now, by late 2011, he had banked $100,000 and was earning $25,000 a month. So Julie said, "Well, hey, this isn't bad." Selling psychedelic mushrooms, making
this could work out.
This could work out. You know, you're turning out better than I thought you would. And Silk Road took off. There was a huge market for buying illicit objects on the web in a way that wasn't traceable. So this was on the dark web. So you could only reach it through Tor, which is the encrypted Onion router. It's a way to go on the web with only encrypted data streams. And so if you go to the site through Tor, you can only get there, and then you talk to the site in a fully encrypted way, and they can't tell where you're located, and you can't tell where the website's located. It's all in the magic of this multi relayed encrypted network run by Tor. And so it was, and none of the encrypted sites on the dark web show up on Google. So it's like, so they call it the dark web. You have to know it's there to find it. So this thing started just taking off. And it turned out that the FBI noticed it. In fact,
as they have a want to do,
the FBI. Now, look, get this. The FBI began to probe Silk Road around January of 2011. Well, that, of course, is the same month that he sold his first load of psychedelic mushrooms.
Oh,
so they were on it almost immediately. Now, they just kept on it because they didn't know who DPR was. They didn't know who DPR was. So they were tracking DPR and trying to see what was going on. And it turned out they ended up locating the Silk Road website. And the FBI didn't reveal how they got that information, but once they located the website, they hacked into it. They downloaded all the data on the website, including all the users. So they had a copy of that. But they still didn't know who DPR was. DPR, that would be, and so Dread Pirate Roberts, DPR, Dread Pirate Roberts. So they didn't really know who DPR was, and they wanted to find him. And so in June of 2013, Ulbricht logged into Silk Road from an internet cafe in San Francisco, and they traced that login. And from that, and they were able from that login to figure out what his Gmail account was. And from his Gmail account, they were able to locate his apartment. So then they knew where he lived. Then October of 2013, that'd be July, August, September, October, 4 months later, he was arrested in San Francisco. Now, on February 4th, 2015, this is just a couple months ago, Ulbricht was convicted of all 7 charges laid by in the U.S. federal court in Manhattan in relation to Silk Road. Now, and he hasn't been sentenced yet, and his sentencing is going to be up in the next month or so. And he can get the minimum sentence is 30 years, the maximum is life in prison. But there's a more serious charge coming down. There was some guy who was blackmailing him, and he decided, I'm going to get a hitman. And the blackmail guy, the guy who was blackmailing him, was going to reveal all of the users that had used Silk Road unless Ross paid him $500,000. So his solution was to hire a hitman to get him.
Oops.
So the FBI got all those hitman correspondences. So there's still a charge coming in for murder for hire that's not coming on. So there you go, Ross William Ulbricht. And his mom was at the trial, and she said, you know, all is not lost because I think my son is really innocent. So there you go. Everything you want to know about Ross William Ulbricht, otherwise known as Dread Pirate Roberts, who's the founder and mastermind behind Silk Road.
So the moral is don't smoke pot, kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I had mushrooms for breakfast.
Oh, okay.
Shiitake.
Okay, well, that's okay.
Powerful stuff.
Yeah, but you don't want psychedelic mushrooms.
No, you don't. Well, we hope you're paying strict attention and not smoking pot, because we have your chance for winning a prize coming up here on the Pop Quiz on Tech Talk on Federal News Radio. 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, 1039 FM HD2. Be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Master's in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
And now it's time for Washington's most popular and longest running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Welcome to Classroom of the Airways. And of course, if it's a classroom, we're going to have to assess whether you've been doing your job as a good student.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll give you a pop quiz. If you get the right answer to the pop quiz, you're going to get A for the day. Plus, you'll win two tickets to fine dine at the Karim Dining Room or the Escoffier Dining Room, either at Woodbridge or Falls Church. Earlier in the show, I was talking about Ross William Ulbricht. He's the founder and mastermind behind Silk Road. When he started Silk Road in January of 2011, what was the first thing that he sold on the website?
Do not delay. Get us the answer today by calling us. First of all, if you're calling from west of Austin, Texas, 877-936-9333. From east of San Francisco, California, 877-936-9333. Everybody else, everywhere else, can call on the wild card line, 877-936-9333. But if you're difficult, Dr. Schertz has another
idea. That's
right.
If you're calling in from the mushroom fields there in South America, you can reach us on Skype. Simply connect to Tech Talk Radio 1, and your call will be forwarded to you, to us, free of charge.
Is that where they're grown?
Yeah, oh, I don't know where they're grown.
No.
I'm certain they're grown there too.
Anywhere where there's shade and dampness.
Any place you've got a dark basement,
there
you can grow them. That's right. Well, Google wants to be your cell phone carrier. So last week, Google officially announced all about their wireless carrier initiative. Now it's called Project Fi. Project Fi, F-I. And they're going to be rolling it out to interested users in the U.S. Now, what they're doing, they're actually buying existing networks like from Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, and they're reselling it. That's how they're doing it. And they've got really a great pricing plan. Now, initially, they're just rolling out for the Nexus 6. That's the problem. It's an Android device. It doesn't support iPhone yet. But I'm hoping that they're going to support all devices shortly. But as what Google usually does, they'll just roll it out initially, and then they'll broaden it as they expand. Now, what they're going to do is they're going to change the whole way things are based. You pay only $20 a month for unlimited text and phone calls. Get this. It's good for 120 countries with no roaming charges. You know, these roaming charges, a complete ripoff.
Mm-hmm.
So now they've got it lined up for 120 countries, no roaming charge. You can imagine how that's going to transform people that just want to travel around the world, $20 a month. And then you only pay for as much data as you want. So they're going to charge $10 per gigabyte. But suppose that you buy 1 gigabyte, or maybe it's $10 for 10 gigabyte or something, and suppose you go over by 20%. So all they do, they just charge you. So they just might charge you an extra $2 the next month. So if they don't like charge you some astro, they charge at the same rate as your base data is.
Mm-hmm.
Then if you suppose only use half the data that you've bought, the data that's unused, they put on the next month. So in other words, you only pay for the data that you use.
Interesting.
And there's no roaming charges. Now, you've got to be invited for Project Fi. So what you want to do is you want to go to the Project Fi website and just search Project Fi.
F-I.
Project F-I. And then you go there and you put in your email address and your zip code, and they'll invite you when it's available in your area.
Very good. We have somebody who would like to talk to us.
Okay.
Let's go to line number one. This is Dick calling us from downtown Annandale, Virginia. Dick, how are you, sir?
Great.
Good.
Okay. Earlier in the show. Thank you. Earlier in the show, Dick, we were talking about Ross William Ulbricht. He is, of course, the founder and mastermind of Silk Road. What was the first thing that he sold on that website?
Mushrooms that he had made.
That is correct.
I jumped the gun there, but mushrooms is...
That is correct. You win two tickets to Fine Dining, the Escoffier Dining Room, the Karem Dining Room.
Dick, thank you for calling. Are you a first-time caller?
Once before.
Oh, gotcha. Thank you for listening to the show.
Constant listener, one call before.
That is fantastic. Thank you
very
much
good.
For checking in. Dick, hang on. We're going to put you on hold, and Andrew will take your information and get your prize out to you. This has been the Pop Quiz on Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2. And we will be back with more in just a moment.
Tech Talk Radio, IT trends, software, the Internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn-by-doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the Internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge of Stratford University talking technology. Well, Facebook has finally shut down the Friends Data API. Now, this was the Faustian choice that you had to make. Often when you would sign up for a new application, you'd have this choice. You could let Facebook access the information about all of your closest friends without their knowledge or permission, or you would just give up that particular product or service, and they would access all of that data about your friends through the Facebook Friends API. I always felt, and this was one of the biggest privacy issues that Facebook had, and there have been a lot of complaints about it. Facebook announced that it's finally shutting down all of the Friends APIs, and it's migrating to the new Graph API 2.0, and these changes took effect April 30th. So right now, there is no Friends API.
Hmm.
Now, they gave the companies warnings that they were going to shut this off at the F8 conference last year. Now, the move will break certain apps like Job Fusion that depended on your ability to use friends' information, because I guess where they were working, you'd use those as leads. Now, here's the thing. The app does not have to delete any data that they already have. Unless you go to that app and request that the data that they've already taken about your friends is deleted. And then if you make that request, they have to comply. But the apps will get no further data. Now, you can also adjust your own privacy settings going forward to deny apps to use any of your own data. Now, in addition, Facebook has created a new logon system that hands over more control to the user. So whenever you actually install a different application, it gives you a link where you can pick and choose which permissions you want to grant. And so you can go down and pick and choose exactly what they have, and there's a lot of visibility here. So the new logon system has Facebook employees also examining any app that requires more information than the public profile to make certain that the apps don't get in the habit of asking for too much information. This is a very welcome tightening up of the Facebook privacy policy, and one that is long, long overdue. Now, the app of the week, the Samsung backup memory app. This is a fantastic idea, and I hope there's just going to be more of them. Right now, it's only available for the Samsung devices, but it's such a great idea. I'm quite sure that this is going to be developed for all the platforms. Now, this Samsung app helps Alzheimer patients remember their families. This is one of the problems when people get Alzheimer. They can't remember things that they should remember about people that come up. And so what happens, this app, it uses an Android tool that uses Bluetooth to detect when family and friends come near. So family and friends will also run that app, and they will upload pictures and movies and sound of things that are memory triggers from the past, so that will be available. And so that whenever they come close to their loved one who has Alzheimer's, the app will detect their presence, and all of the pictures and movies and memorabilia that they want to remember will come up on the iPhone, and the person with Alzheimer's can look at it, look at the pictures, refresh their memory, and they can say, oh yeah, I remember who you are. This is an absolutely fantastic idea. It's very simple to use, and I think it's going to go well.
Is there any thought that because of the additional stimulation to the brain that it might actually help to, not only will it help these people recognize, but actually slow the actual progression of the disease?
That's what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They actually are saying that they think it will slow down the effects of Alzheimer's.
Mm.
There's a little bit of early test data that shows that it does slow down the effect of Alzheimer's. This is such a great use of technology. And, I looked at that. I said, wow, that's so logical. I never thought of it, but yeah. I think it's a fantastic idea. So it warranted app of the week. Now, Viber and Google are helping people in Nepal by providing free phone service. So T-Mobile is offering free phone calls to Nepal after the big earthquakes in Nepal, that 7.6 earthquake on the Richter scale that killed thousands. I think it might be up to 6,000 now. I mean, mm-hmm. It just wiped out their infrastructure. So T-Mobile's offering free calls. On Sunday, Viber announced it would switch off all Viber Out billing. So you can call people on Viber Out in Nepal, and it would be free. Google Voice announced on Monday that it would offer one-set calls to Nepal. The normal rate for Google Voice was 19 cents per minute, but they dropped it to 1 cent a minute. And Google said, we would have made it free, but we were afraid that there would be spamming systems that would abuse it. And so they thought if they have a 1 cent cost, it will keep these automated spamming systems from making phone calls in Nepal saying, do you need help with fixing your roof or something? I don't know. So they didn't make it free. They made it just 1 cent a minute. So now the question is whether people in Nepal will be able to receive those calls or texts, because phone lines and all the digital service in the country remain weak or very, very much destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the one thing that I think I'm going to sort of jump to the thing a little bit out of order. I want to make sure we get to it here. Google is changing their search engine this week. It actually changed it on April 21st, and they updated it so that they favor sites that are mobile friendly. So, like for instance, on the Stratford University website, we've got dynamic web pages that detect, say, whatever device you're looking at, an iPhone, an iPad, or a desktop. It detects that, and it dynamically reconfigures the page to match the device. So that would be viewed, our website would be viewed as mobile-friendly.
Mm-hmm.
But you might have other sites that are not mobile-friendly where it's a big screen, and you go to it on a mobile device, and you got to scroll back and forth and look at the big screen because it doesn't shrink down for them. So that would not be a mobile-friendly site. So what Google is saying, when you're doing a search from a mobile device, they're going to give you mobile-friendly sites first. And sites that are not mobile-friendly are going to be downgraded in the search results. So many companies that have not prepared their sites properly may drop dramatically in the search, in the search engines. And so many people in the SEO business, search engine optimization business, they're calling it mobile-geddon. Mobile-geddon. It's because it could be apocalyptic. For millions of websites. This is, of course, SEO companies trying to drum up business because of the mobile-geddon. Now, a marketing company, Somo, did a study last week, and they found, for instance, that American Apparel's brand site is not mobile-friendly. They found the Daily Mail is not mobile-friendly. They found Ryanair, which is a big air thing in Ireland, is not mobile-friendly. And they'll all get punished as soon as this comes up. Now, if you've got a website and you want to see whether Google's going to view you as mobile-friendly, they've got a test page. So simply, you can Google mobile-friendly website test, and I'll take you right there, or I'll have the link to it, which is google.com/webmaster/tools/mobile-friendly. It's a lot easier just to Google it, mm-hmm. mobile-friendly website test. And you just simply put in the URL of your website, and it'll tell you whether you're mobile-friendly or not. Thought that was kind of an important one. Well, there was a guy who got charged $24,000 on an AT&T bill.
Yikes.
And they didn't actually treat him very well. Now, this guy was Ron Dorf. He's 87 years old, and all he does, he logs on to AOL using an old dial-up account.
Oh, no.
And he's got a modem, he's got an old dial-up modem, and he gets on there and he does his chat. He's, there are a few people that are just diehard AOL users. So he was logging on to this thing, and in March he received the bill. Normally his bill's $51 a month from AT&T. In March he got a bill for $8,500.
And I'm 83 years old, he survived getting that bill? Yikes.
And so then he called the company, and they said, well, I don't understand, we'll check on it. And then nobody ever got back to him. Then the next month, he got another $8,500 bill, and so he then owed them like $17,000 in change. And then he called again and said, okay, well, we'll check on it again. And then in May, he got a third bill, and he was up to $24,000. And they were adding interest on the thing, and they said, you've got to go. And what they discovered was that a virus had attacked his AOL account, and it changed the number that he was calling. He was calling a long-distance number.
Oh, no.
Which was billed like a phone sex line at like $20 an hour.
Oh, no.
And he was sitting there getting charged. So there he was. They finally cleared it up, and he's done. Listen, we love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu, and tell them that you heard about the programs on Tech Talk Radio.
Thank you for listening today. Tune in next week. And, of course, if you've missed the show or would like to tune in later, hear it again in its entirety, it is going to be replayed here today at 2 o'clock on Federal News Radio. See you next week.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFMHD2 Manassas, WTLPFMHD2 Braddock Heights Frederick, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics. Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Federal News Radio's DoD Wednesday. At 3, DoD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DoD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. At 4, in-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a smart discussion on the issues and challenges of the defense community. Plus daily DoD updates, mornings and afternoons, Monday through Friday. DoD Wednesday on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Caps hockey on the air today, beginning at 12:15 with the pregame. Puck drops at 12:30. Sunny, nice, 75 today. It is 50 degrees right now.
Tuesday.